Welcome to the second Supercoach Coach podcast of the 2013 preseason. I'm joined by Mark.
G'day everyone, how you going?
And we've got a lot to talk about. We've been away for a couple of weeks. We've been really busy developing the website. I know it was supposed to have been launched by now, but unfortunately, as things generally are with website development, had contractors overpromise and underdeliver. So good news is, I think we should have the website online soon. Again, don't want to put anything too concrete on it because last time that sort of backfired, but I'd expect to see it this coming week. And hopefully you'll all be happy with the product and yeah, it'll have been worth all the hard work, Mark.
Yeah, it has been a long summer of getting ready for everyone. But yeah, we've got a pretty exciting product to release and excited to talk some footy, and footy's back, Fox Footy's playing all the games, so yeah, it's getting a bit exciting.
Yeah, so there have been two lightning rounds played so far. Because the third one hasn't been played, we think we're going to try and meet back midweek next week to cover the first half of the lightning rounds. So for now, we are planning to have a show mainly focused on mid-price players, Mark, which we both love.
Well, I think you love more than me, mate. We have both had a bit of a history picking mid prices, and probably more than a lot of other places, and had a fair bit of success doing so, particularly yourself in the last couple of years. Personally, I think there's a couple of rule changes this year that mean that there's less incentive to pick them. So I'm moving away from the mid prices, mate. I know that you're still stuck in the past, but the future is guns and rookies.
Yeah, I actually find it the complete opposite, Mark. Now that we have 30 trades, the genuine mid-price lover in me comes out and says, you got more chances to fix your screw-ups, so there's even more chances, more reason to go for the riskier mid-price picks. So I'm certainly keeping a keen eye on all the mid-prices this season. So anyway, just before we get into it, Mark, we have to sort of reference something because We have bomber lovers on this show all the time, and
I hate the fact that you have happiness in your voice when you're talking about this.
I know, I'm sorry, but I know there's a huge rant coming up, and I'm sort of looking forward to it. So why don't you have at it, Mark? What's been on your grills this last week and a half?
Been a tough time to be a Bombers supporter the last couple of weeks. I wore my Essendon polo to work on Friday, and then just the amount of crap that you get from people, and everybody's got an opinion, and opposition supporters are taking it as a good chance to have a whack at us Bombers, and I might do the same if it was on the other foot. But yeah, there's been a lot of mud thrown at the club. It's a bit unfortunate because the club says that they're innocent. If they're proven innocent, no matter what happens from here, they're going to lose millions of dollars in support, possibly sponsorships and memberships and just future following from people. It's going to be harder to get kids to go for Essendon because they're going to be like, their parents will be like, no, don't go for the drug cheats. And so, yeah, it's been a fair whack on the club, and we've just invested in a new training ground out of the airport, so we couldn't really afford to be taking such a whack at this time. But look, if we've done something wrong, then obviously we very much deserve that. At the moment, the club's very much saying that we haven't done anything wrong, and as someone said, why would you order an investigation into the club if you didn't already know what the outcome was going to be? So it's been a very tough time, copping so much crap, but it's also been a bit of a unifying experience amongst the Bombers. And I was there on Friday night, and all the Bombers were getting behind Hurdy, and the opposition supporters were yelling a bit of stuff out, but definitely gave us a reason to really join together and get to the games and stick behind the club. It's the biggest shame for me is that a month ago, I was very excited for Essendon this season. I thought we're a chance at top four. We could really improve. We've got an improving list. We've got BJ Goddard. Everything's so exciting. And now there's just this big cloud hanging over us. So, yeah, it's been tough. And I think now that the footy is back, the focus is going to move away from it a little bit. It's obviously still going to be there. But I think at this stage, most people are just frustrated that there's no information out there, that they've released all this stuff to begin with, but there's been no convictions or no real details come out about anyone. So I think that's frustrating most footy fans, and most people are willing to just get on with the footy and focus on that. So, yeah, in relation to Supercoach, I think that at this stage, the fact that we have 30 trades means that I would still be picking Bombers. It's not as if you're going to have a lot in your team, but if you have maybe a couple plus Goddard or one plus Goddard. I don't think it's going to be a huge issue. If the player gets banned, you'll just have to treat it like it was an injury and trade him out.
Yeah, and I think the investigations, Mark, are supposed to take a fairly lengthy period of time to complete. So might not even be completed till the final series where they get cleared out of the way for Geelong, maybe.
Well, that's the only way you guys are going to have any.
We are an aging list, Mark. Come on.
You were telling me over summer, mate. You were saying the Geelong list is the perfect age and we're just looking to get our players the development and stuff. And you were pretty confident last time I spoke to you.
All right, Mark. All right. Don't get too defensive. I think that was an adequate sized rant for that. I just want. Do you think they actually doped Mark?
The only reason I do is because I think that Steve Dank was lying in the interview, just from his body language. But I think that there's no way that the club knew about or the players knew about it. Like, that seems to be pretty clear to everyone that the players certainly didn't know if they were being drugged. And if you're ever going to trust someone in footy, I think James Heard's about as trustworthy as he gets. So you think the coach didn't know either. So, yeah, I'm hoping not, mate.
Yeah. But it sounds like even if they were, you know, guilty of doing that, that this type of thing's pretty hard to prove. So, yeah, it's not looking too bad in terms of being able to get away with it, even if they did commit anything. So we'll see.
Stephen Dank seemed very confident that he would get away with it, even if he had done it. Like, he seemed very confident that they weren't going to be able to prove anything.
Yeah. All right, on to some actual Supercoach stuff, Mark. I think we've all heard enough about how upset you are that Essendon's been dragged through the mud, so let's get on to some Supercoach. In the back line, Mark,
I think I actually want to talk about the rule changes a little bit first in regards to the mid-prices, because we are going to focus on mid-prices today, and there's definitely a lot of people talking about them, and they're such a controversial topic in Supercoach world. But this year, I think the biggest rule changing affecting it is that we now only have 6 defenders and 6 forwards with 8 midfielders. I know in the past, Marcus, where have your successful mid-prices been?
I think typically, Mark, forward line. Cheap forward line guys or cheap back line guys. There's been a few there too. I think back line's probably easier to justify the success rate, because typically it's been hard. Like, we've not been able to get a D7 that's averaging 100. So if you get a mid-pricer that pulls off an average of 90, you sort of got a successful keeper there. So from that point of view, the cutting down of the forward and midfield sort of affects the ability to pick mid-prices there.
Because there is no D7 anymore. You're saying your successful mid-prices have slotted into your D7 in your final team. Yeah. But that position doesn't even exist anymore. So personally, I think that means that mid-prices in the forward line and back line aren't so necessary anymore, and you should be looking to get 6 premiums into that spot. The best way to do that is through a premium rookie approach, in my opinion. And I'm not a huge fan of mid-priced midfielders. I think maybe they're a little bit more relevant this year, but there's so many good rookie options in the midfield that I think you're better off just going premiums and rookies in there as well.
I think, Mark, if you're making the point that you know, the reduction of D7 to D6, you know, reduces the viability of those mid prices in those lines, then, you know, equally, if moving out from M6 all the way to M8. That mid prices in the midfield become a whole lot more viable. And that's certainly where I'll be looking to introduce. I'll definitely be picking a mid price midfielder this year, whereas in previous years, I'd say that's a definite no-no. But
I think that's countered by the amount of great rookie midfield options available, and also the fact you were saying before that in the defenders, you can have a successful mid-pricer that doesn't actually reach a very high average, but in the midfield, you need that mid-pricer to be averaging a lot. So it's so unlikely that that's actually going to happen, that they're going to average over 110. So
I don't think we're going to have 8 midfielders averaging 110 by the end of the season, like we had, 6 midfielders averaging 110 plus.
I think it's likely that that's completely attainable.
All right, I probably think that the M8 spot has has more flexibility in it, and that, you know, and midfielder averaging 105, which there are plenty of, is more than fine for the end of the season. And equally, you've got to consider that the guns and rookies approach has always been favored because it allows the team the team, especially if they've been successful in implementing it, to achieve like a more full-on premium team by the end of the trade period, as compared to people who have probably compromised more of their money generating ability by picking mid prices instead of rookies. But this year, I mean, I think that's sort of less of a factor because you've got 30 trades, and in fact, you could even see it as an opportunity to boost your scores. I know, Mark, we've talked previously that guns and rookies are good for achieving, that fully premium team, but they're also, sacrifice a bit more scoring, especially in the earlier rounds, as compared to mid-pricer teams who can, if you've picked the right mid-prices, outperform a guns and rookie team before you've hit the upgrade season. So from that perspective, you could view it as the 30 trades as an opportunity to take more risk, to generate more points in the early part of the season, and potentially launch into the trade season with more opportunity to fully upgrade your team. Whereas previously, if you had more mid prices, that might have been a struggle, and you might have had to hold on to some mid prices that aren't quite fully premium.
Yeah, I kind of see it a little bit differently. I see that you're picking mid prices so that you wouldn't have to upgrade that position. So you're trying to save trades by picking a player that was a bit cheaper and that could hold on to a premium spot. So I think the extra trades are actually an opportunity to be upgrading all of the rookies in your team up to premiums. And I think that the fact that you've got extra midfielders as well means that you're going to need more trades to generate cash, and you're going to need more cash to get up to premiums because the premiums cost so much more money. So, from that respect, having rookies generating a lot more money is going to work a lot better for you in the longer run.
Yeah, I think as it is with all years, Mark, the guns and rookies versus mid-price debate will stay fairly healthy throughout the year, and that's good. I'm hoping to prove you wrong with my heavy mid-price strategy this year, but then again, there's a lot of water to go under the bridge, and the main thing we've learned about in previous seasons is that you don't play to a particular strategy, Mark. That the really good coaches, you pick your strategy based on the fantasy landscape each year. So,
Yep.
with 4 or 5 weeks left to go, or however long it is, there's still a lot of water to go under the bridge.
I think you make a really good point there, Marcus, that what's helped both of us in the last couple of years or few years achieve good results has been flexibility and adapting to the situations and not going in with a prior plan of how our team's going to be structured and sort of determining how it is depending on where the good players are and the rookies are and the mid prices are. And we're going to cover quite a few mid prices today, and I think there's not quite as many great mid prices as there has been in past to pick from this year.
Yeah, and certainly they seem a little bit more highly priced than I would have wanted, but well, it's all about uncovering the gems in the rough. So we'll take our best crack at it, and as there is always each year, a lot of the successful mid prices come out of nowhere and do actually surprise us. So wouldn't be surprised if some of the best mid prices for the season aren't yet discussed in this podcast.
Yeah, but I mean the problem with a mid pricer like that is that they're so risky that yeah, they might come out and surprise us like we hadn't expected, but 9 times out of 10 picking that sort of player, you're gonna fail.
But you have more opportunity to fix it this year. Anyway, to the back line. Cam Peterson, we're starting with Mark, 278K from the North Melbourne Football Club.
Melbourne now, mate.
Melbourne Football Club now, sorry. how do you think he'll slot into to the new to the Demons lineup? He has scored quite well at North Melbourne, but playing as a tall in a side that should probably end up in the bottom four, doesn't bode too well for him.
Yeah, I think that he will. They've recruited him to play a bit of a Lee Brown type, I think. He was more of a key defender at North, but I think they're looking for him to play as a forward, especially early in the season with Mitch Clark probably in a bit of a doubt at this stage. So I'm not exactly sure how he's going to fit in because they do have a lot of key defenders and they're going to have Clark and Dawes already sitting up forward. So is there room for him to play up there as the third tall? If he is playing that sort of role, I think he'll score pretty well. You could easily see an 80, 85 average from him. Averaged 84 before at North. Obviously, it might be a bit of a struggle to kick goals in the Melbourne lineup, but if he can get up on the ball, He doesn't seem a terrible pick, and I'd be looking to see him over the preseason and see what his exact role is and what he can produce.
Yeah, I think for players that I'm going to have to trade out in my team, I do like them. Like you said, Mark, you only expect 80, 85, and I think that, you know, pretty realistic considering the team he's playing for. So with players like that, I like them to be in the low 200s. I know that's like really nitpicking, but, you know, that extra 50K, if Pedersen was at 220, is a rather large difference. I think at 280, if it's to trade him out, not quite my cup of tea, but we'll have to see how his preseason goes. He might blow us all away. Anyway, Nathan Box, the next player we're going to look at, 297K. Really surprised us, Mark, with his first year with the Gold Coast Suns. We didn't expect him to score quite as highly as he did. And last year, we know that struggled with the injury, and it's only priced at 297K going into this season. Do we think that he's able to replicate the results from his first season at the Gold Coast Football Club, Mark?
Yeah, short answer is no, mainly because he's coming back from a broken leg, and you just see players in the past that have really struggled with that. It can be something that requires a couple of years to really get over. And I know he has had a bit of an interrupted preseason. He hasn't been able to achieve do all the sessions, and there's some doubt that he's actually going to be playing round one. It's a bit of a shame for the Gold Coast because they are paying him a fortune to be up there, quite getting the value out of him because of that. And he would be a good leader for the Gold Coast Suns, but a no for me, mate. If he was fully fit and had a big preseason, I think he would be in most teams.
Yeah, I think got to agree with you there, Mark. The broken legs, even Barlow couldn't do too much coming back from that, let alone a guy who's a fair bit older than Barlow. Now, I think the third option is probably the most attractive option of the three, Mark, but he's also the most expensive. That's Chris Yaren at 362. Playing under the new coach, do you think he'll be playing again, Mark, out of the back line? Or we've seen him play as a forward, and we know that eventually he should be good enough to play in the midfield as well. Do you know where Mick Malthouse plans to slot him in, or any guesses at that?
My information from the intra-clubs is that he has been playing off half-back. Hasn't had a huge impact in those games, but you'd expect him. He's so versatile, has such great disposal, can kick the ball really long, heaps of pace. You'd think that he would get stints in the midfield. If he's getting shut down up back, he might get stints up forward. So from that respect, he does look like he's primed for a big season. Last season, you really have to write it off. He just suffered from injury for most of the year and had sub-affected scores influencing his final average. In 2011, he averaged 87. Just based on natural improvement, you'd think he could maybe add 5 points to that. And if he could average 92 in the back line at his current price, I think that'd be a pretty good result for you. So, yeah, he's definitely on my watch list. He'd be one of the mid prices that I really am considering at the moment.
Yeah, I'm just a bit worried, Mark, because actually, if you take a look at most of the successful premium defenders, not too many of them are actually the taggable types. Like Bo Waters, for example, you know, he gets a lot of his points from taking those pack marks and stuff, but or floating across and taking intercept marks. But Chris Yaren, he's going to get all his points off his run and dash, and that's the type of play that gets hurt really bad by those taggers. And we've seen typically in the past that even if these types of players get on to a good start to the season, that they very quickly get shut down by opposition taggers or by a forward tagger and then will struggle for the remainder of the season. Do you see that being a big issue for Chris Yaren? Because, I mean, in his first two seasons, it's easy to go a bit more unnoticed, you know, playing off half back. But now third year, you know, good preseason and whatnot, it'll only take, you know, five good games before he's locked down for, you know, the next 10.
Yeah, I don't completely agree with that. I think that last year we saw a move where because of the zones, that was a lot harder to man up on these half-back flank types, and those shutdown roles didn't quite work as well. I think in some games he probably will get shut out of the game, but then in others he's going to have a big one. So I think that if Shannon Hearn can average 92 and be priced at 490, I don't see why Chris Yaren couldn't do the same. Hearn obviously does have a brilliant kick on him, but so does Yaren, and Yaren's got that bit of extra pace as well. So yeah, I think it's probably some sort of issue, and if he was priced above 450, that would be a factor that I'd take into consideration more. But because he's so cheap, it seems very unlikely that he would lose value unless he got injured.
Yeah, certainly don't think he'll lose value. My only issue is that priced at that point, he's not a guy that you want to be trading out your team at all. He needs to stay in your team the whole time. And like you said, Mark, we're moving from D7 to D6 this year. Is 92, is 92 worth good enough to have in your D6 spot anymore? Maybe not. Now to the midfield, Mark, a guy who has already played in the Lightning Cup round that we've watched, Andrew Embley at 283K. How did you see his game?
He had four touches, moving between backline and midfield. So I think it was just a bit of a light run for him, just getting out there and getting through the game uninjured, a bit like Lacroix, is how they were planning to go about it. The only thing that really attracts me about Embley is the fact that he's 280K. The fact is, which is pretty cheap for a midfielder that could potentially average above 90. Has averaged over 100 before. It was quite a while ago, but he does have kind of a premium scoring history. I think that with the way the West Coast midfield is set up, it's so deep and it's got so many talented people in there now that he's not really gonna get heaps of game time in there. He's probably a bit of a sub candidate, given the role that he can play. So I think that he could turn out to be have a good season, but just a no for me given his age and the role that he might play.
Luke Boll, 301K from Collingwood. Didn't play the first Lightning Cup round, but returning from that ACL injury, how do you feel about Luke Boll? We know that he's capable of averaging, probably 95 plus, maybe just kissing upon 100. He's obviously his kicking efficiency being the main thing stopping him from scoring high points, but we know he gets a lot of those stoppage balls, which are worth a fair bit in Supercoach.
Yeah, he's young enough, and 300,000 is really cheap. I picked him up at 400,000 a couple of years ago, and I think in hindsight it was a mistake. He did all right, and he scored okay, and I ended up having to trade him out, but probably didn't do quite well enough, and I felt like he put me in a bit of a sticky situation, to be honest. But at 300,000, if he's fit, then it's not a terrible price. I think that there's talk of him possibly missing round one. He seems like there's a good chance he will play it, but the idea that he might miss round one means that there's still some fitness concerns there. What do you think about him?
Yeah, probably. I prefer to pick a breakout candidate, I think, over Luke Ball, just because, like you, Mark, I picked him a couple of seasons ago. And, when you watch a guy struggle to break out from mid price to premium once, you sort of don't want to go down the same route again. So I know that in his second year, he got a lot more confident with his kicking, and they came off a better preseason as well, and he was just more confident with his fitness in general. I know he did say that before he actually did, get injured. But so, I'm a bit, yeah, I'm a bit hesitant to go back down the same route. And I think Brent Maloney at 362K sounds a little bit more tempting. He's moved from Melbourne Football Club over to the Brisbane Lions. We know how good he can be. He did win a Best and Fairest with Melbourne, and he's a great stoppage player. The only issue on him was that the knock on him was that he didn't probably work hard enough defensively. But that's actually a pretty good thing for Supercoach, isn't it, Mark?
Potentially, yeah. Yeah, I think I like him better than the other two personally. He's had a he was not coming off injury, he just sort of had a terrible season at Melbourne, so price cheap, should play a bigger role in the Brisbane midfield. Is he the midfield mid-pricer that you were talking about earlier that you're considering?
Yeah, well, at this stage, certainly. We all know that, when you first cross to another club, the incentive to prove yourself is a lot higher, and that generally translates to an increase in scoring. And we tend to see that. So, obviously, he's very underpriced at the moment as well. We know he's capable of a much higher average than that. And yeah, I think Maloney, if he's not having to pull all the weight, you got to remember that when he did win that club best and fairest, he was doing the Jamar to Maloney. There was pretty much a sideshow. They were doing it all pretty much all by themselves while the rest of the team was struggling. So,
And you wouldn't think that that had happened at Brisbane. There are a few more midfielders around him that might get a bit of attention. And as our good friend Dr. Bones mentioned the other night, that at Melbourne he was getting tagged out of games, and it's probably unlikely to happen at Brisbane. So he might actually have potential to score above what his previous current highest average is, which is 99. So, yeah, look, he's definitely someone that I would consider at least. Possibly even maybe more relevant for a league team where you are looking for those early wins, but not a terrible pick.
Yeah. Now, to the Rucks, Mark, where we absolutely love mid-prices, Matthew Leuenberger, 301K. The guy just needs to get on the park to be picked on my team, I think.
Yep, absolutely. Coming back from an Achilles, we saw last year that Ruffhead was able to do that and spend quite a bit of time in the ruck and be okay. I think Leuenberger's followed a similar program. A few weeks ago, he got back through his first full training session. He's played in the intra-club the other day. Yeah, everything points towards Leuenberger being a really good pick. If he could average 100 from where he is, which he's done before, then that'd be fantastic. I know he did have injury troubles in his first three seasons, but then played two full seasons without missing a game after that. So, yeah, it seems like a really good pick at this stage.
And Long has not developed enough to be a threat yet, is he, Mark?
I don't think so. I think at the moment they're actually looking at playing Stefan Martin as a forward slash part-time ruckman. So, you'd think that Longer, they might try and give Longer some games at some stage, but it looks like Leuenberger mainly ruck and Martin just rucking some of the game, which is even better for Leuenberger's scoring.
Yep.
There was one player that I wanted to mention that we didn't have on the list here, Marcus, which is Nathan Vardy with McIntosh going down.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on Vardy? He's 239K, which is, yes. And he's not he's not ruck forward eligible. So 239 is a really tricky sort of price. What do you think?
Yeah, Mark, I'm always happy when you put more Geelong players on the run sheet. That's fantastic. Yeah, he's very, very, very skillful player, super athletic, but I think you can't get over the injury concerns. I know he's saying that the hip's all good for now, but it was supposed to be fairly chronic and fairly career-ending before he managed to pull through with everything. So I guess having... That's the type of pick you need to see a stellar preseason from before you even consider it. I certainly be looking forward to entertaining him as a forward player in my team a little bit down the track. But for now, just keep him on your watch list, and keep hopeful. But not really an option until he shows a lot more. Now, Shannon Burns is another former Geelong player that we're talking about. Moved to the Melbourne Football Club. 230K, so cheap as chips as well.
That's the sort of price bracket that you were saying that you really like, Marcus.
Yeah, because even if you have to trade them out, I think at that price point, I'm more than happy to entertain that. Whereas when they get up to the 280 to 270 range, I do like to be able to feel that I can hold on to them, particularly if they're over 300, they're definitely a hold type for me. So, Burns does fit into that type. But Mark, I want to get your views on him before I reveal my views on Shannon Burns.
Look, I think he kicked five goals in an intra-club for Melbourne the other day. That might say more about Melbourne's defenders than anything else. But yeah, he just hasn't had a premium average before. Highest ever average of 84, and that was in one season where Geelong won the grand final. I certainly don't see Melbourne win the grand final this year. I think that the fact that he kicked five the other day in the intra club is going to suck a lot of people in, and he's a definite no for me. What do you think?
Yeah, that's good, Mark. I'm glad you're in the sort of ballpark I'm in with him. Yeah, a lot of people are looking at him at this stage in the season. I guess, there are enough reasons to look at him, but I think anyone that's seriously considering him probably has not watched enough of Shannon Burns playing football. Yeah, he's been a fringe player most of his time, and when he actually did, cement himself as a permanent member of the team, his biggest, kudos was the fact that he was playing better than Matthew Stokes. Now, if when you're playing at your best, your compliment is you're playing better than Matthew Stokes. And, let's not forget, he provided speed where we really needed it too. So I don't want to discredit him too much. But he was worthy of the premiership in 2009. But that was simply for the role he played for the team, not because of the player that he's not a superstar or anything. He does... Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the selection. And I think it's pretty indicative, Mark. After the five-goal intra-club haul, when the coach was interviewed, he did say, It's good that he didn't start poorly, and he was pretty hesitant to give him big kudos. And I think that's because, at the end of the day, you don't want to give this guy too much raps. He's brought into your team for leadership, for direction. He did have a good game, but there's no reason to hype him up because they know what he is. He's not a superstar. He's not going to be, especially a small forward at Melbourne Football Club, he's not going to be delivering superb averages. So I think it's a stay away from me. I think, I don't see him averaging 80. I think the highest it'll be in low 70s. So that's a definite no-no.
Okay, next player we want to look at is Chris Knights. Now, I know a lot of us had him in our teams in 2011. He was priced at about 220. And he did okay. He didn't really deliver on promises, didn't really capture the form that he showed in his early years. This year he's priced at 248, so a little bit more expensive. I wonder what we'd need him to average from there. Early in his career, in his third season, he averaged 90, and if he could do that again, gee, you'd be absolutely loving the fact that he picked up Chris Knights for 250, but just hasn't been able to find that form in the last couple of years and consistency with his games. So you'd need to see him really have had a big preseason and really a bit of a different role change at Richmond, and maybe he might be a breath of fresh air and really step up in the Tigers. So there's a lot of unknowns with Chris Knights, I think.
Yeah, I think he's a really good kick at goal, Mark, but for some reason that hasn't really translated to good field kicking. Now, what I'd probably put that down to is probably decision making, and I guess, you probably have more doubts in your head when you're a fringe player struggling to stay in the team every week, so that, exacerbates the problem. But, in modern day football, you don't really have room for players that are making those types of mistakes. And that was precisely the problem that, I remember that, in 2011, even when he was getting lots of the pill, he wasn't doing enough of it with it to score good Supercoach points. And we know you need to be a decent decision maker, or whenever you get a good, whenever you get this, your hands on the ball, you don't actually generate points with it. So I think that's the issue with Knights, and I'm not sure if that'll necessarily, change at the Richmond Football Club. But, like you did say, Mark, he has previously averaged 90. He has the ability to move through the midfield and the forward line, be a guy that picks up, 20-type disposals, at a low 20 disposals or high teens and still get, a couple of goals, which is, should be good enough, a decent enough average to hold. But with Chris Knights, I think you'll really want to see, like I said, and it's the case with most, most old mid prices, but particularly with Knights, you're going to need to see a really strong preseason. And if he can really cement himself as a permanent 22 member of the Richmond Football Club, then maybe take a look at him. But if not, I think is another one to stay away from. I know he really annoyed me, Mark, because I held on to Knights the whole time. And, he, even though he started on my field, he was performing so poorly that eventually I just held him as cover for the whole season. He just moved out to F8. And to be honest, I remember that there were rookies that were outperforming him, even though I had Knights as an advantage over a rookie. When he came onto field as cover for me, he just bit me in the ass. So I'm a bit wary of him.
Yeah, understandably so. I think we've both been burnt by him before. That's why I'm a little bit cautious to say anything too bad about him, because he does have the potential. We did pick him for a reason 2 years ago. It just didn't work out for us. So yeah, I think keep an eye on him.
All right.
So what I want you to do is, next player we're going to look at is Travis Barker, who is $20,000 more.
Yes.
Knights has averaged more than Barker's highest average on three occasions.
Yes.
Why would Barker be a better pick than Knights?
Yes. I get to talk about Travis Barker this week on the podcast. I love Travis Barker. So first off, disclaimer, because you obviously need to know that if I'm about to pump up his ties. I'm a Geelong supporter. Have sponsored him on Big Footy previously. Won his signed Guernsey. Super big fan. Mum and dad saw him at a function. Got a photo with him. And pretty much massive fan of the guy. So you got to understand that before we start. Now, the reason I'm really excited to have him back was, remember when Gary Ablett left, Mark? It was a whole big thing down at Geelong. He was actually my white knight, Mark. I was really hoping that he would step into Gary Ablett's shoes, move into the midfield and fill the void. But unfortunately, that season, He had issues with a shoulder when he went to the international series, and when that pretty much wiped out the next season and the year after that. I think was it a foot fracture or something like that, and pretty much wiped out the season as well. So I haven't got to see much Travis Varko, especially playing, back to his best for last couple of years, and I'm so excited to have him back at a price point where he's relevant for Supercoach.
So he's a lock for your team, I'm gathering.
He's at 268K, definitely a lock for me. But he is not actually playing from the forward line this year, Mark, I don't think. They're actually
No, he's
looking to
been
play
training off half back with I think Motlop's been training back there as well as someone that can have a bit of dash. In the first NAB game, I think he played half forward and half back.
So I think from that perspective, it's even better news from Varko. We know that it's harder to score as a small forward than it is to score as a rebounding defender. So that's a double tick for Varko. He's a really skillful player, Mark. He's got a lot of pace. We did p draft him with our first round draft picks, and as you know, they've been going pretty well in recent years. Harry Taylor, all Australian in his third year. And we do show, a lot of faith in our first round draft picks as well. So, I think Mark, that Travis Farco will be an excellent pick. He'll deliver the returns you expect from him. I expect 90 plus at least, and that's good enough for me to pick my favorite player. Maybe people have to take a more critical eye on him, if you're not as much of a Travis lover as I am. But watch out for his preseason. I think the more you
His
guys,
preseason's been very good, I think.
I think the more you guys see of him, the more you'll understand why I'm so excited, because I think he's good enough to play in the midfield.
But I don't think that they're talking about him as the Gary Ablett replacement, like you
No,
were saying.
no,
Like,
no.
there's not talk of him playing in the midfield, so I'm guessing that he's quite an explosive player, but he doesn't quite have the tank for that.
Yeah, especially, not after, two fairly weak seasons. You'll need more than one season to build up a tank for the midfield. We all know that. Chapman's, like you said, finally come out and said that he spent 2 years to try and build that tank and to play more time in the mid, or to play more time, in the midfield to get his running ability up. So yeah, I don't think he's quite ready for that this year. But I think his eventual, unless Geelong fills up with midfielders quick smart, we are losing a lot of midfield talent in the next few years. I think he'll eventually slot into that position. So he has that capability, similar to Yaron, but he is currently, because of where his development is at, playing off half back. And I think you can lump him in fairly similarly to Yaron, who costs 100K more. They're both first round draft picks, and Varko to me seems like a really good proposition. He is a lot older as well, put a lot more time in the system.
I think in 10 years' time, when we look back, we'll look back and see Yaron is a much better player than Varko. Yaron has a kicking ability that Varko just doesn't have.
I'm no doubt about that, but I think that it's pretty fair to draw comparisons developmentally for where they're at. Obviously, like you said, Mark, Yaron has a lot of talent that's just bleeding out from him when and you can see it so obvious when he plays. But if you probably haven't watched Farco enough to see the same class, and remember that goal in and his work rate too, Mark. Remember that goal in the grand final where he started the play off half back and ran all the way to half forward and set up that goal, Mark?
Nobody wants to hear you talk about Geelong
Yeah,
Grand Final wins,
no,
mate.
you don't remember that? It was pretty fantastic.
I think we should move on and talk about a couple of West Coast players. The first one I want to mention is Mark Lecrae coming back from, I think, 17 months without footy, ACL, priced in about 360,000. What do you think about his chances for this year?
I think we always talk about Mark Lecrae. Is he moving, finally moving into the midfield, finally moving into the midfield? I think with West Coast, where they're at with their strong young midfield brigade, that, and especially coming back from injury, like you said, Mark, that he'll be spending his time in the forward line. And I know that that typically has been a problem with him, for him, in terms of being able to generate consistent scoring. But what we haven't seen is yet a Mark Lecrae playing for a side that have been so cohesive as a forward unit, as they have been. He should do a lot better now with the, you know, we're going to talk about Josh Kennedy soon, but you know, Josh Kennedy, Jack Darling, these types, they're going to step up a lot more, and they have been in the last couple of years, and they're well again this year. And we all think that West Coast are fairly serious contenders for the flag this year as well, and therefore that should translate to pretty good home and away season results. And we know that that's really important when you're talking about players like Mark Lacroix, who aren't the highest scoring players in the team. The team generally has to be doing pretty well for him to maintain a premium type average, which I think West Coast are capable of this year. So,
so is he on your watch list or not?
Yeah, he is on my watch list, but probably less so than Kennedy.
After missing a full year of football, if he was under 300,000, I'd probably pick him, but I just don't see the scoring improvement coming from him at 369. Like, his highest average ever before is 86. There's way too many risks involved to be paying such a premium price for him, I think. Next player I want to look at is Josh Kennedy. Coming into now his eighth season, missed a lot of last season. Highest average ever before of 86. He's played 108 games, only scored over 111 times. If you take out the time where he kicked the 10 goals, his average would be a lot less than that. But as you say, West Coast should be a big improver this year and would be a good chance to finish top of the ladder. So is their centre-half forward fantasy relevant at 299,000?
Yeah, I certainly think so, Mark. Like, you just, you know, even though you haven't rattled off the greatest of numbers for him, we've got to remember that, you know, at the end of the day, he's a key position forward. So some of the numbers you rattled off, like 110 games played, you know, 8 seasons in the AFL system, those are the type of, you know, figures that I'm actually looking for Kennedy. And I think this year, like you said, West Coast doing well, should do well, playing centre-half forward, super talented guy. We've seen his ceiling, 162 points or whatever he scored when he kicked 10 goals. Yeah, definitely on my radar, but you know, it's with key position players, they do fluctuate a lot. So maybe he's best an option to be. I do like picking more consistent players at the start, Mark, just because you keep yourself open to the inconsistent options who are going to rise and fall throughout the season. So that, you know, there's an opportunity for a bargain later in the season. So from that point of view, I'm always more hesitant on the key position forwards from the start of the year. So he'll have to show a lot in the preseason for me to even consider him. But at this stage, he's certainly on my radar because, you know, he is very much a breakout candidate, and he could do a Tom Hawkins this year. Who knows?
Yeah, unfortunately, he didn't play in the first round of the NAB because he picked up a minor ankle injury at training. So he was rested in the first week, but he will play at some stage during the NAB Cup. Interesting to see how their forward line works. I think if Knight and Uwe was around, he might be a bit more relevant. There's definitely a chance that he could kick 60 goals this year, and if he did, he'd average 90-ish, which should make him to turn out to be a pretty decent pick. I think some people are thinking he could average like Nick Riewoldt and score 110. I don't think that's likely to happen. Personally, pretty unlikely to make my team, but I can see some of the reasons why people might actually be picking him. Marcus, I'm gathering that everyone we've discussed in tonight's program is in your team, given your mid-price stance.
Not quite, Mark. I think I've got, at this stage, Yaron in the back line. Maloney, he's not actually in my team at the moment, but certainly on my watch list, high on my watch list, and has floated in and out a couple of times. Leuenberg is currently in. And Varko is currently in my side of the players that we talked about. So that's quite a lot, actually.
I think people looking for the mid-prices this year are probably going to pick them up forward more than anywhere else because there are, like we've discussed, 4 or 5 options tonight, and there are a few around at those reasonable prices. And they're just be aware of how painful they can be to pick because they can be frustrating to watch. So they can get injured. They can not score quite what you expect them to. My main advice would be that the best success I've had with mid-prices before are performer premiums that got injured and are therefore heavily discounted. The only probably person that fits that category that we've discussed so far is Leuenberger. All the other players are discounted because of injury or missing games at their previous club, but they don't actually have a previous history of premium scoring. So that would be my main tip and advice for the day.
Yeah, and also player types that are out of position. Like last year, and I know we mentioned this, and we were like, do we pick up Dangerfield or Sidebottom? And I made the point We're only looking at this because we had so many quality forward mid price options last year. But to me, it was a no-brainer to pick both because, they're both going to be playing in the midfield, but listed in the forward line as mid prices, and they were genuine. They're both first round draft picks with real skills. So those are the types of players that are good as well. And we haven't really discussed players like those in this podcast, but those types of talks tend to come a bit later in the preseason, Mark, when we've seen those breakout candidates show a little bit more. So at this point, it's a bit more speculative based on those players returning off from injury. So it is a lot harder to pick from this point. But we've got to start. We always start thinking Supercoach fairly early, Mark.
We do, and hopefully we can get the website out this week, get everything going. We've got some articles ready to go, and everyone can sign up, and we'll do another podcast during the week.
Yeah, and just because of the delays, Mark, we've actually revised our pricing model, or we'll revise the fact that we were going to be a completely donation-based community. And actually, we're going to release the site with a lot more access to the public, a lot more free access to the public. So most of the features that we're introducing this year will actually be available to everyone for free. So
But we've
please.
also got some pretty big prizes to announce as well,
Good
which we'll do
for
all that
that.
on the next show.
So hopefully we'll hear from us soon with some very good news. Until then, all the best. Enjoy the NAB Cup viewings and enjoy toggling with your teams.